All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movie's inspired it. And today on the show, we're doing one that I didn't think we'd be covering, but went and saw it, loved it, and was like, we got to fit something in because this movie is just too good to really pass up. We were talking about The Art of Self-Defense from writer-director Riley Stearns, starring Jesse Eisenberg as a guy, a mild-mannered guy who he gets beat up after work one day and his life is kind of falling apart, and he decides to take up karate and things go in very strange, dark directions from there. With me to talk about it is film critic Josh Bell from the other podcast that I produce, Awesome Movie Year. And we got a great conversation for you guys. Lots of great puzzle pieces. And like I said, you should go watch this movie because it is a great one. So before we get into that conversation, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. So, hey, why don't we just get into this one, all right? This is the third of three episodes this week. That's a lot of piecing it together. And if you've been listening to all these, then you've heard my opening spiel a lot. So let's just get into it. All right, so back with us today, we've got Josh Bell. Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm on a Quentin Tarantino kick right now, but first, before we get to that movie, we're going to talk about The Art of Self-Defense.
We are. Maybe yeah. We'll talk about Quentin Tarantino this one.
It might come up.
Yeah, it could.
It's very possible. So, this one, I had posted on Twitter that you know, maybe we should try to make an episode on this happen. And you messaged me and said, hey, I'd do it.
Yeah, I jumped on it because I really like this movie and I had been looking forward to it for a while. I liked the director's first movie, Faults.
Which I did not see.
Which is different. This movie is a lot more comedic and Faults is a lot more serious, but very, very well acted. And so, I was looking forward to seeing this and I had gotten a screener in advance because I wanted to be able to talk about it on my TV segment and give it a bit of a plug. And I really liked it. I mean, I know we maybe usually wait until the end to say, but I will say that I like this movie quite a bit. It's one of my top 10 movies of the year at this point.
Nice.
And I was happy that you had seen it because I'm not sure how much promotion it's getting.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that it got like as wide a release as it seems to have.
Yeah, it's maybe not warranting that in terms of its box office, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know if people know what to make of something like this, but yeah, I mean, obviously people like us liked it though,
right? It's something that the people who are interested in this kind of thing I think will really like, but it is surprising to me that it got a 500 plus screen release or whatever, including three theaters here in Vegas.
I'm glad when it happens, though.
Yeah,
made it easier for me to see.
There you go. Yeah, I watched it at home, but were there people in the theater when you went to
see
it?
There was, and I will say, they were into it.
Oh,
I
good.
Mean, there was a lot of laughter at
yeah.
all of the, like, the weirdest, most awkward parts. People were into it and, like, really laughing. So, hopefully it gets a little word of mouth. I guess we'll see after this week.
But, yeah, I hope so, too. I'm glad to hear that people are going to the theater to see movies like this.
I
went to see Wild Rose a week or so ago, and almost my friend and I were almost the only people. There was one other person who showed up right as it started.
Yeah,
but
Jesse Buckley's biggest fan was just in the corner there, just cheering.
Something like that. But that's more of what I expect when going to see movies like that here.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear.
So before we get into puzzle pieces, an important question. Did you do karate as a kid?
I did not. I am the least athletic person in the world, and karate was not my thing. I think my parents did force me to do some athletic activities.
Yes, as did I.
And I did not choose karate. I remember my younger brother did karate when he was a kid. I remember by that time I was like a teenager, and I remember having to get dragged to wait for him at his karate lessons when we lived in Southern California, and one of his karate classmates was Frankie Valli's son. That is my strongest memory of childhood karate, is my mom pointing out Frankie Valli sitting waiting for his son to finish karate class.
That's pretty cool. I like that story.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think my mom forced me to do it for a couple of years. I never made it past white belt, so I guess
Not even the yellow belt?
No.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, I was as unathletic as humanly possible.
You didn't break a board?
I did break a board.
Oh, okay.
My mom still has it. It's at her house. So, let's jump in. What do you got for your first puzzle piece?
Well, my first one is probably the most obvious one I've seen referenced in many, many reviews of this movie, but which I think is accurate, is Fight Club. Mm-hmm. And in addition to being accurate, I think it's also one of my absolute favorite movies. And I think seeing comparisons to Fight Club before I watched this movie was one thing that made me think, oh, I want to see this because I love Fight Club and I like that kind of satire and the deconstruction of masculinity and what makes a quote unquote real man. I think Fight Club did an amazing job of that. And of course, the thing with Fight Club is that a lot of people who saw Fight Club took it at face value, which of course was not the intention. And this movie is a lot more comedic than Fight Club. I think it would be hard to come away from this movie thinking that it is pro sensei,
right?
Alessandro Nivola's character. Whereas you could come out of Fight Club and misconstrue that it is trying to endorse the antics of Project Mayhem and Edward Norton and Brad Pitt in that movie.
I feel like sensei probably watched Fight Club and loved it and for all the wrong reasons.
Yes, absolutely. You could, you could see this movie as in a way a response not only to Fight Club, but to the people who loved Fight Club and who took Fight Club way too seriously. But I think Fight Club is brilliant in the way that it satirizes and also sympathizes with these men who feel lost and don't know how to be men and latch on to the wrong thing.
Yeah.
This expression of violence as a way to take back their power and their individuality. And I think Art of Self-Defense does the same thing in that Jesse Eisenberg's character latches on to the wrong thing, that he reaches out for anything that can make him feel like, quote, a man.
Sure.
And finds this very misguided thing that ends up being taken way too far. And the cult, if you want to call it a cult.
Sure.
In the Art of Self-Defense.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, Sensei's cult. It definitely has a lot of similarities to Project Mayhem in the way that they're attacking people in order to sort of bring them out of their shells and prove to them that they need to step up and be a man.
Yeah.
And things get way more out of hand in Fight Club than they do here.
Yeah.
But I think it's clearly a major, if not the number one influence here on this movie.
Absolutely. And I also, I love that everybody massages each other after their fight
very
sessions.
Very homoerotic. Yes.
But no, absolutely. Fight Club is, of course, on my list as well. And I think all the things that you were just saying about masculinity and all that and misplacing what is going to make you better or a better man and all that. And then also on a surface level, the hierarchy and the rules and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're one step away from saying rule number one, you don't talk about Fight Club, you know? There's so much, I think, in this movie that seems influenced by that.
Yeah, I think I even saw one review that made that specific. Like, the first rule of night class is that you don't talk about night class.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. All right, I'll go with my next puzzle piece, which is another one that I've heard mentioned before, and it was the first thing I thought when I saw the trailers, which is Napoleon Dynamite, which is a movie that I don't think this ended up being quite as much like it as I thought it would be. It certainly goes in darker directions. It certainly has more to say, like we were just talking about, all that stuff with toxic masculinity and all that. But there's still just so much awkward weirdness, so many weird characters, and such like a strange way of talking. Everybody just talks to each other in very odd ways that it almost feels like a bad dream in a way, watching them communicate with each other.
Yeah, I also saw Napoleon Dynamite referenced in a lot of articles and reviews, and I kind of was unsure of whether that seemed right to me, but it's been a long time since I saw Napoleon Dynamite. And thinking about it as you're talking about it, certainly that very stilted, almost overly formal way of speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a big thing. And I'm now remembering, is it Napoleon Dynamite? Is it his brother or his cousin that he lives with?
The Uncle Rico. Well, yeah, Uncle Rico is the one that I thought was the closest to that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah.
But there's definitely a character, I think it's John Grease's character, maybe
that's the uncle.
Uncle who's Rico. Very obsessed with proving his own macho-ness when he's clearly the farthest from macho that you could possibly imagine.
My favorite line from that movie is one that nobody ever really seems to quote, but it's, how much you want to bet I could throw a football over them, their mountains. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think maybe it would be worth looking back at that movie, because I think the ridiculous pop culture sort of saturation of that movie turned it into this object of annoyance very quickly. And of course, Jared Hess never really made a decent movie afterwards. No.
Well, I'm going to go on record right now and suggest it for 2004 cult classic on Awesome Movie.
Ah, that is a good suggestion. It is certainly a cult movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe something that's worth another look.
So what do you got for your next puzzle piece?
All right. Well, my next puzzle piece is The Karate Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about kids doing karate. And I think more than just the fact that this takes place in a dojo, and we do see a few glimpses of classes with younger students that's not really very relevant to the plot of this movie, but clearly, in addition to their illegal murder activities, they're also teaching kids karate, and also teaching kids how to murder, it seemed like, at least in that one scene.
Sure did, yeah.
But more than that, I think the idea of the sort of egomaniacal sensei and the dojo that exists to crush its enemies is very much something that you see in the Cobra Kai in Karate Kid. And of course, they're the villains in Karate Kid. And in a way, that mentality is also the villainous mentality here as well. The idea that martial arts should be used to destroy your enemies and destroy the weakness within and things like that. Which, of course, is the opposite of what Mr. Miyagi would teach. I think Mr. Miyagi would not approve of sensei.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe the girl will turn into more of a Miyagi-like figure.
We can only hope, yes.
Let's hope so, for sure. Yeah, unfortunately, my 80s credentials are about to be smashed, that I haven't seen The Karate Kid in many, like, literally since I was a child. But, but yeah, I mean, of course, it's such a classic of the karate world. You know what I mean? It's just so... just such a huge impact, I think, on so many people.
Right. And one thing that I haven't seen that I wonder, I think, from what I've read about it, sort of calls into question that idea. What I just said about the Cobra Kai is the Cobra Kai TV series, where they're sort of the heroes, and I think they've shifted maybe their approach as opposed to when they were fighting Daniel-san, but
I've heard great things about it.
I have too.
I figured I should watch the movies again first, but
I've actually never seen, I think, any of the sequels. Although I did see the Jaden Smith Jackie Chan remake.
Ooh,
unfortunately.
How was that? Let's talk about that for a while.
Let's not.
So I'm gonna go with my next one, which is the Martin Scorsese film Taxi Driver. And Jesse Eisenberg's character, just going from, you know, more of a mild-mannered guy to just life just going in complete crazy direction. And, you know, lately we've been seeing this kind of a story being used many times from, First Reformed and, You Were Never Really Here. And, it's a great story. You know, structure to put something on, to put a character into the situation where they're just going deeper and deeper and kind of just cracking along the way.
Yeah. I wonder if there's some political or social thing in the air right now that makes those stories a popular topic.
I think there probably is.
Yeah. No, I think so too. And I think it's interesting too, because you can take these stories in different directions. I mean, in something like Taxi Driver, or even in You Were Never Really Here, that character goes off the deep end and just kind of keeps going off the deep end until at a certain point they're past any redemption. Or you can get something like this movie where at a certain point, the character realizes that they're going off the deep end
and
pulls themselves back.
Absolutely. And that definitely puts a nice little spin on it. Something that's a little more hopeful in its own little weird way, you know?
Right. It's weird to call this movie hopeful that ends with the double murder and
exactly.
Like putting his finger in the guy's skull, but it is weirdly hopeful at the end.
Yes, it is.
We can transcend this toxic masculine culture.
So yeah. What do you got next?
So my next pick is I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, Macon Blair's Netflix exclusive that also was the winner at Sundance, I think 2 years ago. And it's a similar story about a kind of timid, put-upon person who is the victim of a crime and decides to fight back in an incredibly misguided and disastrous way. And in that case, it's Melanie Lynskey is the main character who is the one who's victimized. And so obviously that's not a comment on masculinity, but she ends up teaming up with Elijah Wood's character, who is this kind of weird loner guy who's disturbingly eager to mete out violence on people on behalf of his neighbor who has been burglarized.
Sure.
And it all ends in a very violent way. But the idea of things kind of getting out of hand, where they just try to do one thing to take back the power, the feeling of being in control of their lives, and it leads to another thing and another thing and another thing. And before you know it, there's dead people and things that you can't take back. And I think that is what's happening here too. And also the dark humor of it. That movie is funny, which makes the horrifying violence in a way all that much more horrifying, because you're kind of laughing and then you're choking on it.
Yeah. That I forgot about that movie back when I was still, you know, catching most Netflix originals. But that was great. And definitely that dark humor feeling mixed with the kind of, not really revenge, but like, you know, just vigilante like.
Yeah. I think that movie is one of the best, if not the best, Netflix original productions.
Sure.
I don't know if it qualifies because it was... Was it finance? But it's all the question of whether they produced it or they picked it up. But it is a Netflix original.
Sure.
And it's absolutely one of the best.
Right on. All right. I'm going to go with my next one, which is kind of a bit of a silly one. But based on the scene before Jesse Eisenberg's character starts heading down his journey into the world of karate, he goes and tries to buy a gun. And he's told that there's a waiting period. And it reminded me of The Simpsons, The Cartridge Family episode where Homer tries to buy a gun. And the clerk tells him, well, actually, there's a waiting period. You're going to have to... wait a week to get the gun. And he's like, if I had that gun right now, I would kill you. It just reminded me of just the ridiculousness of just gun culture. And like, you know, and it's very simple comparison right there, but it just totally reminded me of it.
Yeah, I think, and that's meant to be. What is the line in this movie is, you know, you have to wait so that if you're really angry at someone, you can't go kill them right away. You have to do it 3 days from now or something like
exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
And this movie kind of, I mean, in a weird way, because Sensei is so anti-gun, that guns kind of save the day in the end here.
It is very strange that way. Yeah.
But certainly that scene in the gun store is very much, and that clerk is so absurdly ridiculous. And then later on when he gets the phone call telling him he's passed his background check and the clerk is dismayed that he might instead buy a knife.
Yeah. That was great. You're not having a kid, are you?
Right. Yeah. That is, I wonder, that might be one of the most, I mean, one of the funniest bits, the most obviously humorous comedic bits in this movie is that back and forth where that scene is very funny.
Oh, it's great. So what do you got next?
Well, my next one is for such an obscure movie, one that I think brought up on the last episode that we had, or one of the recent ones, and that is the Jesse Eisenberg film The Double, in which Jesse Eisenberg plays two people who look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And the dynamic in that movie is that one Jesse Eisenberg is very similar to this movie, this kind of shy, put-upon, nebbishy office worker who lets everyone walk all over him.
Mm-hmm.
And the other Jesse Eisenberg is the kind of flip side version, who's the confident, kind of mean, take charge, doesn't listen to what people say version of the character who comes in. And in that movie, because they're two different people, he kind of steamrolls over the other meeker Jesse Eisenberg and gets whatever he wants, gets the girl that he was after and things like that. But in a weird way, this movie has two versions of the character.
Sure.
And the version that's been molded by Sensei kind of steamrolls over the original version and gets rid of his affection for his dog and gets rid of his previous interests in learning French changes him into a whole new person.
Yeah, we see him in all of the same situations, just going back, but now as kind of an asshole and just totally obsessed with his new newfound manliness.
Right, and I think that movie in The Double, it's almost like that, but split into two different people. And I had a few options because I feel like Jesse Eisenberg, even though some of the reviews I read of this said, oh, this is a different kind of role for him. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he's played the like nerd sociopath multiple times now. In addition to The Double, I mean, you could talk about, and maybe this will come up, but, you know, The Social Network or even Batman versus Superman, where he takes that nerd persona and turns it around and makes it into the nerd as evil guy.
Sure. Well, you know, and that's funny. I kind of just had a note. It wasn't a puzzle piece per se, but since you're bringing that up, I'll bring that up right now. I feel like this movie is just so perfectly, possibly even inspired by him, his just kind of persona as an actor, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I almost wonder if Riley Stearns like ever could have had anybody else in mind for this. It just seems so perfectly a Jesse Eisenberg movie.
Right. Yeah, it does. I mean, I think the cliche would be to say that also Michael Cera could star in this because they're,
possibly,
they're
yeah.
considered to be so similar. And Michael Cera has done a little bit of that toxic nerd kind of character, but I feel like Jesse Eisenberg has really owned that and has really been able to tap into that dark side of this, what we usually consider an innocuous kind of character.
Sure. Right on. Yeah. And to the puzzle piece, The Double, still haven't seen it, but
it's a decent movie. I feel like it's maybe not as good a movie as the amount of attention I've given it on this show, but it is an interesting and a very good performance from Jesse Eisenberg, of course.
Right on. Well, I will go with my next one, which is a dark comedy from Jody Hill called Observe and Report, which is, you know, very different from this movie. Not any of this stuff is exactly happening, but I just felt, generally speaking, the tone of it. I think these are like exact tone-wise matches. I think that movie, which has come up quite a few times on this show, I think it's just a great little weird dark comedy with just weird people doing awful things, you know. I just feel like the tone of it is just a perfect example of something else that deals with characters and situations like this.
Yeah, that character certainly, who is also this guy who feels powerless and goes way too far in the other direction in order to feel powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really not a Jody Hill / Danny McBride fan at all. And I didn't know. I wondered if you were going to bring up their karate movie, The Foot Fist Way.
It's kind of coming a little bit.
Oh, okay. But... well, sorry. I didn't mean to spoil
no,
that.
No, it's all good.
But I've seen Observe and Report. I've actually not seen The Foot Fist Way, but I thought, oh, this is clearly something that is relevant. So hopefully it will come up.
And sure, absolutely.
I can't say anything. I'll stop talking about it.
Stop it, Josh.
but yeah, Observe and Report, I think, is maybe their most... dark and violent work, although I guess Vice Principals got kind of dark and violent.
Oh my god, yeah.
I never watched past like halfway through the first season.
A lot of people didn't like that show. I love that show.
Yeah, like I said, man. I'm not, any of their stuff that I've seen has only been out of professional obligation, and I just am not at all a fan of their deal.
Ooh, that hurts.
But yeah, it's just not for me.
Professional, but I can obligation.
See, I can see how it would be relevant.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, what do you got next?
Well, my next one is the kind of thing that we sometimes say where it probably couldn't actually be an influence because most likely it was being produced at the same time. But it made me think of this movie a lot, especially because of Sensei's obsession with metal. And that is the Norwegian black metal biopic Lords of Chaos, which came out earlier this year. And that's a true story about the band Mayhem in the, I think, like late 80s and early 90s. But it is, again, about these nerdy kind of loser dudes who latch onto something that makes them feel powerful. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it's black metal, but also Satan worship and the idea of being against organized religion and against any kind of expression of human compassion almost.
Yeah.
And they take it from something fun and silly where they're just playing music and they're painting their faces.
Yeah.
And it becomes very dark and very violent. And this is a true story where these people eventually ended up not only burning down churches, but murdering, and one who is spent a lot of time in prison. So it's a way that you can see how this does reflect reality. And maybe this movie is heightened and it's silly and no, this kind of exact thing would not ever really happen.
Uh-huh.
But those feelings are real and they can be taken to that extreme. And I think the stereotype of heavy metal is this masculine, manly music, which, I mean, and I'm a longtime heavy metal fan.
Yeah.
I just think it's so funny to see it used that way because there are so many nerds who love heavy metal.
Yeah.
And really, in its most ridiculous form, it's such a nerdy thing.
It is.
To be
totally
super into.
Yeah.
And I think this movie uses it well because it is more than like a real expression of manliness. It's the nerd's idea of what being manly is.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So, and again, I say that as a big metal fan and with lots of affection for heavy metal music.
Sure.
As long as it doesn't lead to actual murder, as in Lords of Chaos.
Well, sometimes that could be extra cool, but yeah, I think you're probably right.
No, no. But yeah, and Kiernan Culkin, who plays the main character in that movie, also has this kind of nerd rage vibe going for him.
That is, I had actually not seen Lords of Chaos, and I forgot about it. I heard about it, and it sounded great, and then I just kind of forgot about it. I should watch that.
It's an interesting movie. I felt like it was a little muddled in its approach. It also, I mean, I think like this movie, it tries to have comedic bits where you laugh at these guys for how absurd they are for taking this stuff seriously.
Mm.
But then because it is, in fact, a true story of people being murdered, it has to be taken seriously, and it doesn't quite get that connection right, but it's an interesting film.
Right on. Well, my next puzzle piece, we were just talking about it, is the Fist Way, which I also have not seen, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Good job to both of us.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. I mean, how could you not make that comparison? And I could have just thrown it out of the way back then when you brought it up, but I was like, I'll just save it and say it myself. But I only have one other after this, so why not? I haven't seen it, but I mean, this movie does have a lot of that Jodie Hill dark comedy kind of vibe, and Danny McBride kind of just a real just asshole kind of character, you know, and is a lot like Sensei, what Sensei is doing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say much about it.
Sure.
But having seen their other stuff, I can absolutely see that tone-wise being similar, and certainly the karate sensei who takes himself way too seriously is a good comedic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ground to cover there.
That's one of those movies that's like been at the top of my list for like, what, a decade now? You know, and I'm just like, I need to watch that fucking movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll watch it this weekend.
There you go. You can insert your opinions back in before we post
this. I'm going to redo my puzzle piece. All right. What do you got next?
My next pick is Mike Judge's Office Space.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah. And I picked Office Space, but really Mike Judge in general, mm-hmm. I feel like is a great satirist of dudes who take themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
And Office Space in particular, of course, is about this guy who works this generic office job, much like Jesse Eisenberg's character does in The Art of Self-Defense. We get the idea he's some sort of accounting guy, but there's never really any sense of like what his company does or what even he does for the company. Mm-hmm. It's just this kind of generic cubicle farm or whatever. Yeah. And that very much is like Office Space. And the character who feels emasculated by being stuck in this environment.
Sure.
And there's this sort of glorification of physical labor in that movie. Eventually, the way to escape the feeling of being emasculated, he becomes what is a construction worker.
Yeah.
Which I think in Office Space is regarded as like a positive. We're supposed to like that character, I think, and we're supposed to feel happy for him that he's gotten there. But I do think Mike Judge has that perspective of mocking dudes who feel like they need to grasp onto something to feel masculine. I mean, Beavis and Butthead, their whole existence is based on the idea of feeling cool and feeling manly, talking about chicks that they're going to bang that is never going to happen. And going back to heavy metal, what do Beavis and Butthead love? They love heavy metal. And Silicon Valley has a lot of that nerd rage stuff. Thomas Middleditch is another actor who I think could have pulled off this,
this
kind of character.
He could have, absolutely. And yeah, I was going to say Silicon Valley was like where I was going when I was thinking of Mike Judge.
Right.
Absolutely. And then also should be mentioned that Diedrich Bader, who was in Office Space, was the sensei character in Napoleon Dynamite.
I've forgotten so much about Napoleon Dynamite. I didn't even remember there being a sensei in that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's hilarious. But yeah, no, I think absolutely Mike Judge's characters, like his whole kind of worldview, this could very well have come from that same kind of worldview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mike Judge, I don't think ever gets to the level of violence that this movie gets to.
No, maybe on a printer. You know?
Yeah,
right.
But that's about was there a murder in Extract? I'm trying to remember.
Extract's the only movie of his I didn't really like.
Yeah, and I didn't really like it either. But I try to recall if there might have been a murder or just a failed murder plot.
Mm.
I can't recall now.
One or the other, probably. Yeah. Well, I only got one more puzzle piece.
All right, I too only have one more.
Okay, perfect. And this kind of goes along with the Napoleon Dynamite and things like that, with just like the just weird characters and all that. And it's just kind of in general the films of Wes Anderson, which I know you are not a fan of. But
no, but that doesn't mean it's not relevant.
But no, just these just very strange characters. Again, like I was saying, just really an otherworldly kind of interactions between them, and where it just doesn't seem normal the way people seem to talk to each other. And not all of Wes Anderson's movies are that way, but certainly there are scenes within them and certain interactions between certain characters where things are just spoken in just such strange cadence and the way that the dialogue is written and everything, just so formal and everything. I think there's a lot of that Wes Anderson feel.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, and I think it's also, we talk about a lot of these filmmakers, and it's taking that sort of comedic or whimsical tone and then adding this extra level of violence to it.
Sure, yeah.
Whether it's Wes Anderson or Mike Judge or Jody Hill, pushing it in a further dark, violent direction.
Sure.
More so than those filmmakers do necessarily.
You know, somewhat related to this puzzle piece, but more just a general thought, is there was a part in there when they're talking about the different colored belts and what they mean, and then they mentioned that it's not really uniform among all dojos, and it just kind of makes it completely pointless. And I just thought that was just so great. Like, it's just like it completely undoes it and like just adds to the ridiculousness of that. I just thought that's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, that is. I mean, and the idea of this hierarchy that is completely made up and irrelevant, but they are become so obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I think in that scene too, the character says it's different in other places, but then he also assures Jesse Eisenberg that our way of doing it is the best.
Yes, of
course. If somehow the order of colors could be better or worse in different instances.
So funny.
Yeah.
So ridiculous. All right. What's your last one?
So my last one was one I was kind of debating whether I really feel confident about, but I had seen, again, in a lot of reviews, the mentions of Yorgos Lanthimos and his films. And the one I was going to mention is Dogtooth, because I feel like some of his other films have this supernatural-ish element that just really does not apply here.
Yeah.
But Dogtooth is one where it doesn't have that. And it also is very much about creating this artificial hierarchy of things.
Sure.
And in that movie, it's a family, and the way that they've evolved all of this ritualistic behavior. And there's a whole language thing there about this, you know, these parents or father in particular, who's taught his grown children all of these words having different meanings from what they really mean. But just the idea of this megalomaniacal leader who holds sway over people and has created this kind of closed system, which they all pledge their allegiance to.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a general sense, like you were talking about with Napoleon Dynamite, the kind of stilted way the characters talk to each other, the overly formal dialogue, the way that the emotions seem kind of drained from these interactions.
Yeah.
That's very relevant. I mean, it's hard to tell as much in like Dogtooth, for example, which is in Greek. And if you don't speak Greek, it's harder to get the nuances of the tone of voice. But certainly in his English language movies,
Killing of the Sacred Deer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in The Lobster as well.
Yeah.
You can really get that sense of the way that the characters speak to each other and how it sounds like they're, you know, reading some sort of prepared speech every time they talk to each other. So
I'm glad you brought Yorgos up, because Killing of the Sacred Deer was like in the back of my mind, and I never thought to write it down, but that is like a perfect one for that. The way they talk, I would say that's like the closest thing almost.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this movie, like a lot of the stuff that's come up here, I'm like, I'm not really that into. I'm not really a big Yorgos Lanthimos fan, especially those overly stilted films. I'm not a big Napoleon Dynamite fan.
No.
I'm not a big Wes Anderson fan.
No.
I'm not a big Jody Hill fan. But I really like this movie.
Yeah.
I think it takes some of those elements and does something with it that I find more effective.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let's do the finished puzzle. We'll get into any closing thoughts. We've got Fight Club, Napoleon Dynamite, The Karate Kid, Taxi Driver, I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, The Simpsons, The Cartridge Family episode, The Double, Observe and Report, Lords of Chaos, The Foot Fist Way, Office Space, Wes Anderson films, Dogtooth, and I'm going to throw in The Killing of the Sacred Deer as well. So, got any closing thoughts on this one, Josh?
I liked it. I mean, as I've been saying,
yeah.
I think it's really good. I hope more people will see it. I hope Riley Stearns will get a chance to make more interesting, weird movies. Alessandro Nivola, we talked about Jesse Eisenberg a whole lot.
Yeah.
But Alessandro Nivola is great.
Oh, he's so funny. So funny.
And I feel like he's one of those actors that he's always sort of like the third build person in some movie that is not very memorable.
Yeah.
And this is the best thing I've ever seen from him, I would say.
He is so good in this and just such a just a maniac, you know. I could talk about him for a lot longer, but I mean, yeah, I just suffice to say he's great.
He's
so good in this.
He is. He's very good. And Imogen Poots, who I like a lot, is also very good here, as I think literally the only woman on screen in this entire movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed it. That's all I have to say. And I would say check out Faults. Also great performances. Leland Orser, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, another excellent movie.
Oh, yeah. He used to be married to her, huh? The director.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
I think so. Right on. Well, yeah, I think that about does it. Josh, you got any other movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend?
I am going to recommend Lynn Shelton's Sword of Trust. Starring Marc Maron and Gillian Bell and Michaela Watkins. A very fun, oddball sort of comedy slash caper kind of thing. Heavily improvised, which is out on VOD right now. And it's a great showcase for Marc Maron as an actor.
Yeah.
Which I think he's been demonstrating more and more lately.
Sure.
If you watch Glow on Netflix, he's really good on that. That he's got a lot of depth as an actor, not just as a comedian and a podcaster. But he's great in that movie. And I love Lynn Shelton. I feel like she's a really talented, interesting filmmaker. And this is her return to something more improvised after a lot of movies that were more tightly scripted. Mm. And I like those movies too. Laggies and Outside In. I think those are really good movies. But if you saw Hump Day or Your Sister's Sister, her earlier kind of looser movies, this is more in that vein, although it's more comedic really than anything that she's done before. It's funny. It's got a great weird performance from Toby Huss as a character named Hog Jaws. So yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. Check out Sword of Trust on various VOD platforms.
Oh, Michaela Watkins is in it too.
I
love her. She's great. Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch that.
Yeah, it's a lot of Jillian Bell, Las Vegas native Jillian Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good in it as well.
Right on. Well, what do you got to plug today, Josh?
Well, we have the Awesome Movie Year podcast.
There you go.
Produced by the wonderful David Rosen, co-hosted by me and Jason Harris. And we're in the midst of our first season about the films of 1994. We've talked about, well, we mentioned Quentin Tarantino, I guess, who didn't come up after all.
No, no, he did not. But now we can talk about him.
We can. Our latest Awesome Movie Year episode on Tarantino's Pulp Fiction. We've talked about Clerks, we've talked about The Lion King, we've talked about North, and there's a lot of cool stuff yet to come for Awesome Movie Year. So find that on all your podcast subscription places or at awesomemovieyear.com. And yeah, please listen.
And stay tuned for that Napoleon Dynamite episode. Yes, when I make him do it.
Eventually.
And I'm Jazz.
And together we are the Feature Podcast, where we talk about movies and everyday life.
Be sure to listen to us on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and iTunes Podcast Network.
And be sure to follow us on social media at Twitter and Instagram at The Feature Show. And Facebook, it's The Feature Show with / Danny and Jazz.
All right, so that does it for today's episode of Piecing It Together. Thank you to Josh Bell for being here. Make sure to go check out the most recent episode of Awesome Movie Year on Pulp Fiction. It's a good one. And yeah, I thank you all for listening to the show. Seriously, people have been really getting in touch and letting me know that they're really loving the show, and I really appreciate that so much. If you've been listening and want to let me know what you think of it, you know, you could just email me directly, bydavidrosen@gmail.com, or tweet at us at PiecingPod, or of course, go rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars would be amazing. We love that you're out there listening, and definitely thank you. And by the way, like I said at the top of the show, this was a 3-episode week, which is going to be a rare thing. We're not going to be doing that many episodes on a regular basis. Even 2 is more than I ever planned on. But that being said, if you haven't yet, go check out our Wild Rose episode that came out on Wednesday and the special interview episode I did with Scott Evans from The Sandlot. So that is a fun episode as well. So make sure to check those out, and lots of other episodes, of course, as well. 77 now? 77 plus a bunch of bonuses and specials and all that stuff. And of course, lots more coming your way. We actually have, God, I think we got like 4 or 5 in the can right now. And we are in the process of recording 2 Quentin Tarantino episodes this weekend. One on his new movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and one that's like a special ranking of all his movies. So lots of podcasts coming your way. You can also join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we talk about all these movies and movies that are coming out and share movie memes and all that kind of stuff, and no trolls allowed. None of the kind of people you would see at that dojo in the Art of Self-Defense. None of those people would ever be allowed in Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. So if you want to come talk movies with some cool people, come join the group on Facebook. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music like we always do. And as Sensei says, you should only be listening to heavy metal. So let's listen to a really heavy track of mine. This is Burnout from my album Head Like Fire. Enjoy it, and we'll be back next week with more Piecing It Together.
and all points west.